Hello and welcome to the Slate Political Gabfest. I'm David Plotz. Joining me today, as always, are Emily Bazelon of the New York Times Magazine. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
And John Dickerson of CBS's 60 Minutes. Hello, John.
Hello, David.
So I, Gabfest listeners, I'm a really normal, regular kind of person. I watch a lot of sports. I go to bed early. I just want to live a quiet, boring life. And like most Americans, I have found the last 4 years just exhausting. We have this situation where we always are constantly having to pay attention to this president and the chaos that he causes. And I feel like whatever has happened, it's now, I mean, it's literally on steroids. The president is literally on steroids. The chaos that the president has unleashed upon his administration, upon all of us, is unspeakable. This last week has been incomprehensibly chaotic. The forced hospitalization of President Trump, who is now hopped up on some kind of drugs, apparently. He's sending appalling tweets that continue to downplay this pandemic. He's pulling out of economic stimulus talks and maybe not pulling out of economic stimulus talks. The entire White House and national security apparatus is sick or in quarantine. His doctors forced into this terrible, like forced into whatever, lying for him in this bizarre way. So, Emily, when it started, it felt like there was some question that the president might get a sympathy bump, that this might remake the presidential race somehow because people would feel bad for the president and maybe he would have come out of it and re-won some trust. But he's committed these two acts of political malpractice. First of all, rather than being a humble, modest, good patient modeling lessons learned, he went maskless and acted recklessly. And more bizarrely, then he dynamited the stimulus talks where Democrats were offering to let him have $2.4 trillion to inject into the economy. So I don't really know what the question was, but man, I feel
well,
chaotic.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I can't quite understand how hope springs eternal that President Trump
hope
is going
eternal,
to turn a
really.
New leaf and hope picks eternal and turn into a new person. Like, this is not the kind of behavior that he has any interest in or maybe is capable of. I don't know. It's not going to happen. And this is the president we've got. And the canceling of the stimulus talks might just go poof in the air tomorrow. There is a problem, though. The Democrats want $2.4 trillion. The Republicans say $1.6. That's almost a trillion difference. Seems like a lot. And I don't see how Trump has any leverage because they think they're going to win the election, the Democrats. And they obviously would rather and need to be seen as helping the economy now. I mean, this is really alarming. The economy, if they don't pass any stimulus, could be in a ditch and no one will be able to get it out until January, presumably. The Republicans are also kind of mystifying unless you think there's some like weird chess playing going on where Mitch McConnell has already given up on Trump and thinks maybe he can salvage the Senate and then block Joe Biden and destroy his presidency by having no stimulus in the new year, in the new Congress. That is so dismal and cynical that I feel bad even laying it out there, but I really don't get this stimulus move. John, do you think it's just like a momentary ploy and tomorrow they'll be back at the table?
I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to figure out the... At first, my first, very first reaction to the president was that this was another instance in which he creates chaos, then there's a solution, and then claims credit for the solution. So he walks away from talks. Everybody says, oh, no. They come up with a solution, even though he's not involved in the actual solution making. And then he says, you see, I got this done, which wouldn't have been crazy. You know, I mean, it's sort of what you do at the, haggling in the market square on vacation, which isn't something I do, but I gather people do that. You know, you walk away and then they, but anyway, it doesn't seem, I mean, now it's devolved into a kind of weird chaos because I thought that was his strategy until he tweeted not very long after unwinding it and making all kinds of offers. I mean, it's incredibly depressing when you listen to Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, say, if you're going to make a mistake, do too much. There won't be a mistake from doing too little. 100,000 small businesses have shuttered. People are there is going to be permanent lasting damage to lots of people's lives, particularly those at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, as a result of damage being done over the time that this is left hanging. I want to go back just very briefly to, well, not very briefly, to the president's illness. If you look at the three main critiques of the president's response to COVID-19, downplayed the risk, didn't take measures to fight it, misled the public, those are the global critiques of...
Check.
Yeah. If you were the Biden campaign and wanted to come up with a script that got everybody to pay attention to those failures and then animated each of them in individual form in their most neon fashion, you would be hard-pressed to come up with a better script than the way the president and the White House has handled his own personal health issues. Downplayed the nature of the risk from the virus, didn't take the measures to mitigate against it, and then when the president got COVID, misled repeatedly, and then misled about misleading, including the vice president during the debate, all of which echoes precisely the larger critique of the president. And for politically, the president has been trying to get the conversation off of COVID-19. This seems to keep it in the center of the campaign for the remaining period of it with the intensity of a dentist drill.
I want to briefly just nod at the Potemkin quality of all of this. This Potemkin world that's been created around the president, where you have doctors, his doctors, creating a false story out in public to cheer him up, lying about his health to the public to make him feel better. And there are no analogies for this, really, in modern American political life. This is not something that we've ever witnessed before. It is pure tin pot dictator
propaganda
nonsense here. And this is what the incredible infrastructure and the incredible health capacity that exists at Walter Reed. You know, I grew up, my father worked at the NIH, and I grew up driving past that hospital all the time. And it's such an iconic building. It's such a beautiful, symbolic building, and it's on this gorgeous campus. And you look at it and you think, well, that Naval National Medical Center really represents something good. And just to see the disgrace and the shame that the president is bringing on it, and the destruction of this reputation too. It's horrible and embarrassing for all of us. And he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't give a shit about it. And it's a tragedy. It is like it's a tragedy. This is what tragedy is. Tragedy is like human folly born by not simply the people who've committed the human folly, but everyone around them. Sorry. Forgive me.
It's okay.
I'm also fascinated that the president has decided to make his closing message of his campaign, suck it up on COVID and get back into the game, when 210,000 people have died and when the country thinks he's mishandled the issue. The president said he won't debate in the next debate, which the Committee on Presidential Debates has said has to be virtual in order to accommodate the results of the president's getting COVID from not following any of the recommendations of his health advisors. So now the president has turned the debate story into a COVID-19 story. It just seems, if you were just thinking of this purely from a political standpoint, he's really keeping the focus on COVID-19 here as the election window closes.
I don't think it's strategic. I think it's about spectacle and attention.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. I don't think it's strategic at all, but if ever there were a moment...
Well, we still keep asking. Like, it seems like you would think about the political consequences. Like you're a political analyst. He's the president. He's ready for re-election. It's the frame. But I don't think it's the frame.
But Emily, what do you mean? Emily, what do you mean when you say it's just about spectacle and attention? That he cares more about the spectacle and attention than he does about framing it correctly politically? Or that he's... made a mistake.
I mean, I just don't think I ever understand what President Trump cares about exactly, but I think what we're seeing is a focus on being at the center of attention and on creating spectacle, not any kind of political thinking, because it doesn't make any sense. And I just don't think that you can like make it. I'm not, John, that wasn't a criticism of you whatsoever.
No.
It just you can't make political sense of it, I don't think.
Well, I think you're right about that, and it's generally more true that it's hard to make sense of the president's, I mean, a lot of things that he does are not out of a kind of pre-thought through strategy. What I think is interesting here is you have two parts of the president's own impulses combined. So it's not just the president's impulses measured against what a kind of traditional politician might do. It's the president's impulses matched against his previous impulses. So the previous impulse before he got sick was shift the turf, talk about Biden's son, talk about violence in the cities, talk about the economy, talk about anything but COVID-19. Don't even, as David once, I think, correctly put his finger on it, don't even put your hands on COVID-19 for the purposes of mitigating and improving the situation, because once you put your hands on it to solve it, you get your hands on it for being blamed for its downsides. That was the previous strategy. And now his current strategy, which is I'm strong, I've bounced back from this, seems at odds with that. It's kind of one set of impulses fighting against another. And that's
what... Yeah, impulse is a good word. Agree with impulse. I think it's sort of reflexive. A question about this kerfluffle over the next debate. So the Commission on Presidential Debates decided to make the next debate between Trump and Biden, this is the second one, virtual, without telling anyone. Like, they just did it, apparently. And I think that's really interesting. Like, they must have decided there was no way to negotiate over this and that they were just going to make a health and safety call because they knew what Trump would say about it. And that, it's just a small example of how difficult it is to hold any kind of nonpartisan ground, because now they're going to get chewed up, as they already have been criticized in this, like, vicious partisan
cycle. It's also how hard it is to deal with a negotiator who, in the case of Trump, acts wholly in bad faith. That if you did a negotiation, you knew that they would not honor those terms. They would not go into it with the idea that this is a good faith negotiation. The idea would be to win it somehow. I mean, of course, you always want to win. You want to win any negotiation, I suppose. But Trump is an extremely bad faith negotiator. So I think just sort of declaring it to be so is probably the only way to get away with it. But John, did you just say that Trump has said he won't participate?
Yeah, he said it was ridiculous.
Yeah, he said he won't participate, which is, on the one hand, the committee, first of all, we should just pause for a moment and think about all the accommodations the Committee on Presidential Debates have already had to make to accommodate the president's behavior. So they've talked about changing the rules and cutting the mic, which they will at some point announce what they're going to do on that front. They had to put two pieces of plexiglass in the vice presidential debate because of the super spreader event at the White House. And now they've had to create a televised town hall in order to accommodate the president. I mean, it's in miniature, a way in which this president and his behavior are clashing against tradition and the kind of weak ways in which tradition tries to reassert itself. But the president has said he won't participate in the debate, and so now we'll go through a round of that. At least, I guess, we don't have to go through the process of constantly chasing people at the White House around the table to get them to say when the president's last negative test was, which presumably would have been some kind of precondition for the next debate, which is assuring that he has crossed some health threshold and isn't still shredding virus.
Thanks for listening to the Slate Political Gabfest. On behalf of Emily Bazelon and John Dickerson, I'm David Plotz. We'll talk to you soon. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to the podcast.